Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the Commercial Property Investor Podcast, where it's my job to introduce you to people from the world of commercial property. We're talking with investors and thought leaders about their experiences of the commercial property world and sharing our own lessons from the last 20 years to give you practical know-how so that you can follow in their footsteps. If you've ever thought commercial could be your next step, but it just seems too confusing and opaque, then you've come to the right place. There are so many exciting opportunities in this dynamic sector, and I'm looking forward to pulling back the curtain and sharing them with you. Welcome to the Commercial Property Investor Podcast, the show dedicated to the private investor, and I'm your host, Jerry Alexander. We want to show you how to cross the divide from residential investing over to commercial property investing. Through interviews, tips and lessons learned, we share experiences of investing and give you the inspiration, knowledge and confidence to enjoy this great cash flowing strategy. So let's get started. Welcome to another information-packed episode of the Commercial Property Investor Podcast. Today, I'm going to share with you a discussion all about ESG. Now, I've mentioned this on the podcast before and threatened to discuss it in more detail. Well, here we are. In this episode, we're really lucky to have Alison Wood join us from the Edinburgh Climate Change Institute at the Edinburgh University. Now, I'm still learning, and as always, I'll share my findings with you through the podcast. I'll tell you a little about the work we've been doing with Alison in a minute. Right, ESG. It stands for Environmental, Social and Governance, and it's sweeping through corporate world for businesses that want to do better or feel they maybe have to do better. All three parts of ESG will affect us as private investors in commercial property, and I guess residential too. And as we discuss during this episode, it's hard not to focus on the environmental side, as targets for net zero will affect every business. What is bringing this to the fore, though, for lots of investors, of course, is the current cost of energy. Now, with the energy crisis aside for a second, it's no longer about a good EPC certificate. Soon it will become a lot more, and putting our collective heads in the sand is not really going to help. Best look forward and embrace it and the opportunities it will represent. And we go through a little bit of that in this podcast. It's a huge topic. And we touch on lots of areas in this conversation, and no doubt there'll be plenty more episodes in the future focused on specific areas, so keep an eye out for them. But for right now, let's get stuck into this episode as we explore some of the myth and dispel some of the hype around ESG. Welcome back to the Commercial Property Podcast. Today I'm delighted to introduce Alison Wood from the Edinburgh Climate Change Institute. Welcome, Alison.
Hiya, thanks for having me on.
Yep, thank you so much for joining me. Maybe we should just quickly talk about where you are and how we kind of got to know each other. It was through a program that you've been running.
It was. So I work at the ECCI, the Edinburgh Climate Change Institute, which as an institute, we do lots of things around enacting climate action. So looking at everything through to government policy, how do we train up businesses in what other weird and wonderful technology can we do to reduce climate change? We're owned by the University of Edinburgh, so we've got a nice affiliation there, and we're currently in partnership with the Royal Bank of Scotland to train up their Scottish SMEs on what they can be doing to transition towards net zero.
Yeah, and that's where we benefited and how we met. Yeah, because we're customers of the Royal Bank, and I got an email. Yep, I'm up for that. So we just finished that at the start of this year, tail end of last year.
Very
eye-opening, and I just felt, right, okay, we need to try and cover this topic on the podcast. The challenge, of course, is that it's such a huge topic, and I guess, you know, maybe the thing we should do is just start by talking about what ESG is, but then maybe narrow it down a little bit towards commercial property owners and maybe what the future might look for us. So let's just start by talking about ESG. Right. So environmental, social and governance. And really, why should businesses and property owners be paying attention to this, Alison?
Well, a couple of reasons. Depends where you sit on the spectrum. So some people, it's going to be around just being concerned about the planet we live in and where it is. So we're fitting it into ESG, we're fitting it into our environmental, social and governance, because that's the three areas that businesses really can make an impact. So if you had your social pillar in the middle, you'd be looking at how well do you treat your people? Are your employees and your supply line safe, secure, people looked after? Or if you trace something back, do you realize that you're using a factory that isn't up to scratch and you wouldn't actually want to know the ins and outs of what's going on? How's the governance structure? Are we making sure that when the business is making money, it's profiting, it's paying taxes and it's supporting other people, or is it purely in it for itself? And then the environmental, are we not causing any adverse impacts? And so are you reducing your climate impact where you can? Are you pouring chemicals into a water source? And if so, can we reduce that? And for some people as a business owner, it's about saying, well, I want to know that my business is doing the least harm it can. I don't want to hear that we've helped cause such and such, or that something went off and you have to go, please tell me that's not a factory we use involved. Which a lot of the time when you see a disaster on the news, I kind of think how many PR teams are now have just been activated because they don't realize that they are some way involved. But the other side is a lot of customers are starting to ask for it. That might be right up the chain. If you're going for government tenders, they're starting to ask, can you prove that you're not doing any adverse impact? But all the way down to your consumer, when you buy something in the shop, you might now be thinking, Do I trust? Do I buy fair trade? Do I boycott palm oil? Do I do many other social initiatives?
Yeah.
My relatively brief summary.
So from a commercial property point of view, I guess there's probably three different factors, really, drivers. The first one is, as you say, environmental protection, sustainability. Are we actually trying to protect? Are we protecting the planet? The second one is, which you know has become very much relevant in the last sort of 12 months, is the cost of energy and the use of energy. And then the third part, which you just touched on, which is the carrot and stick. So, you know, there's some changes here coming down the line that are going to, that are legislative, right? And there's future customer demands. In fact, customer demands are already starting to filter through from some of the larger organizations that are kind of the carrot that's saying, look, if you don't do these changes, you know, we might not be using your properties anymore. So let's just talk about the stick for starters, right? What are Westminster and Scottish Government targets in terms of environment?
So specifically for buildings, we've sort of got two main ones that are coming in. One that's very much about EPCs, which everyone has a love-hate relationship with. And sort of saying by, let me check, I want to say 2025, they're expecting all buildings to be at C if you're going to be renting out or selling it on. And the other is around how we're generating power, and not power, heat. So desperately trying to get people off gas boilers for any new build, that's 2025, from 2030, you won't be allowed, well, you shouldn't be allowed to change your gas boiler for another gas. We'll have no new gas installations. That for a lot of people is a bit of a shocker because most people are still using gas heat buildings. So we have to start looking at, well, how do you transition? Is that a heat pump or is that electric heating or is that something else? But I think those are the two bits of regulation that are coming through. The bits that come before that is, well, what does it take to meet that? If you want to put a heat pump in, you can't generally just attach it to your building tomorrow. Your heat efficiency is really important. So if you've got single glazing and very thin walls, you're not there yet. And how do we prepare people for that? And that a lot of the time it isn't strongly regulated. We're just regulating the end result. For the most part, watch as this changes, Scotland and England are relatively similar. So while Scotland says it's going to be net zero by 2045 and England says it's by 2050, the 2030 dates are fairly secure in both areas.
There are some little nuances, isn't there? And EPCs is one of those, just between the two different governments. But basically, the direction of travel is pretty much the same.
Yeah.
And net zero by 2050, it doesn't mean we have to do it all this year. But you know, we have to continually improve, right? So I think that the number that we spoke about was the 10% change per year. So maybe you could just talk through that.
For me and for a lot of people, 2050 is a very long time away. And the more we think about 2050, the less we do today. But if we actually want to hit 2020, 2050, we need to do a 10% reduction year on year till 2035, and then 20% year on year from that point. So if you want action now, looking at that line in the sand and saying, okay, can I hit that next year? And that's what we're seeing a lot of larger businesses when they're asking their supply chain to do it. They're putting much closer targets. They're starting to say, we want to see a climate action plan within 2 to 3 years. We want to see reductions within 4 to 5, because they're being measured that way. So they're pushing that.
Yes. Line. Is it not going to become incredibly difficult, though, when we get down to, let's say we've been unbelievably well-behaved, we've got ourselves down to 40%. You know, the incremental differences then, the low-hanging fruit's gone.
Yeah.
How do we make those changes at that stage, Alison? What's the thoughts in that one?
So hopefully by the time we've got rid of the low-hanging fruit, it's going to be relatively big changes will make a big knock-on effect. And so I'm not going to be talking to you about turning your lights off. I am going to be talking to you about making sure that you've got your heat pump installed. Some of it is that it's relying on lots of other changes to come through, which on the course I've very much tried to sway you guys against, because getting hold of Westminster is hard work. But we are expecting things like the electricity grid that we all use to be decarbonized and to be focused on renewables rather than gas. And that will help with the step-by-steps. We're expecting land use to change and peats to be regenerated. And that way, that will help with your next changes. So some of the changes won't have to be businesses. Some will be slightly bigger. Some will be hard work. It will be losing the last kilo on a diet. And we're going to need behavior change and people to stay with it. But at the moment, for a lot of businesses, we're right at the beginning of the journey, which also makes it quite nice, because it means small changes have quite a big financial difference. Sure. Everyone likes it when it saves money.
Sure, yeah. I'm glad you brought that up about state intervention, because at some point there needs to be recognition that if you're making pies, and your pies are vital to the economy, right, you need heat to create the perfect pie. And really, if your business makes really good pies, should it be making lots of green energy too? Or should that be perhaps more with businesses that make green energy? If you understand what I mean, that's how our economy works, right?
Yeah.
You make the pies, I'll make the energy. You make the taxis. That's how it works. So, you know, current calculations don't really take that into you know where I'm coming from, right? It's one of those things where you can get this stick walloping you, but actually it isn't all down to businesses.
If you love to travel like me and you understand the power in escaping the money for time exchange trap, but you just don't know how to do it, then building an Airbnb consultancy business could be exactly what you have been looking for. Right now in the UK, there is a completely untapped opportunity through helping struggling Airbnb hosts by turning around their underperforming properties and generating you huge commission payments in the process. We are going to teach you all of the tools and all of the techniques that we've learned over the last 5 years through building our very own multiple six-figure Airbnb business, arming you with everything that you need to swoop in and save the day. Minimal startup costs, zero risk, and almost unlimited potential. Sound good? Welcome to the Airbnb Consultant. Contact us through any of the channels included in the studio notes to get the conversation started.
Now, a lot of it does need to be change across the board. So we need individuals to change. I think a lot of the businesses on the cohorts that we talk with often say the customers are asking for it, but they're not necessarily purchasing it. So saying it. And therefore, as individuals, we need to make sure that we're buying sustainably. The businesses are able then to make sustainable, and we need to make sure that the governments are putting the right enforcements in place so that the grid is changing, because the grid is one of the things that we really need to change over.
It's a huge thing, isn't it?
There's going to be lots of players acting together to see it.
Yeah. So when we talk about net zero by 2050, you know, for businesses or the big changes by 2030, which is not that long away, 2035, you know, it can be a wee bit concerning. People are like, well, the only way I can do that is just stop trading. I'm just not going to use any energy, so that way I don't produce any waste, you know. And obviously we can't live like that. We have to continue doing things. So there is that thing from the grid. So I guess what I'm trying to say is that you know, there seems to be this big pressure on getting to net zero as a business, but actually it's not all down to you. There are going to be some other factors there that are going to make a difference. But let's just talk about the carrot. So that's the stick from the governments, Westminster and Scottish Parliament. But the carrot, so there are more businesses now asking. So just in our own example, customers coming in using our spaces are starting to ask about environmental credentials. I mean, they ask about lots of the other compliance, but they are now starting to ask more. Obviously, the obvious one being EPCs, but this is so much more than an EPC. And they're starting to ask about that sort of information. And I know that the larger multinational businesses are demanding it, and they're making choices on space that they take up based on those credentials, because they, those boxes must be ticked. If not, they have to go somewhere else. And I think you'd mentioned NHS, which I thought was maybe a good one to talk about. Just that they're sort of projecting what their changes are going to be in the next few years. They're getting, giving suppliers a bit of a bit of notice. But what's their policy?
So there, so NHS England, not NHS Scotland, but I do actually really like them because they've made a really clear what is our roadmap, basically, and then explain to people what do they want by different stages. So off the top of my head, which could be a very dangerous way to do it, within about 3 years, they want all of their suppliers who are contract, who are selling them over a million, to be able to tell them what their carbon footprint is. They're rolling that out within about 2 years after that to everybody else. And then they're breaking that down from, you don't just need the number, you need to have a reduction plan in place. You don't just need a reduction plan, you need to be proving that you are meeting it, which is a bit that, as someone interested in this, I'm glad that they're starting to say, can we actually, can you show that you are reducing yours bit by bit? But that is all coming into play within the next 10 years. For most businesses, their heat and their electricity is a massive part of their carbon footprint, especially when you do it initially, because you focus on those parts.
Yeah.
And therefore, anyone who's supplying someone like the NHS, or in fairness, Scottish Government are about to bring it into their tenders as well. As part of your tender, you have to be reporting on your environmental emissions. They're going to need to be able to say what are their numbers. And if they're in a building that's not well insulated, that's got the oldest lighting available, that number is going to be inflated, which is not going to be helping them get those deals. So that's why a lot of customers are starting to ask about it, because they're aware that they need to start reporting on it. There's quite a lot of regulation coming in to that space. So large, well, over sort of 35 million plus turnover companies are starting to have to report on their scopes as a government level. So they're as part of their financial reporting.
Yep.
And therefore they're asking their supply lines for those numbers. And I would kind of assume if you're being asked what that your current carbon footprint is, you're going to be asked next year with an expectation it's lower, even if it's not that obvious just yet.
Yeah, it's no longer about measuring and just saying, here's my measurement, tick. Yeah. It's about, yeah, making changes. You mentioned scope, and I'm going to come back to that in a minute. But just with carbon footprinting and measuring it, they're it's way beyond EPC certificates.
Yeah.
You know, and you did mention that, you know, there are different types of businesses out there. And you mentioned there about energy, but obviously there are other things that factor into carbon footprint, right? So just maybe we just touch on the four archetypes of business, just to cover that off, so that, you know, people have a think about where their business sits in terms of these archetypes of business, because, you know, they have different approaches then to how they're actually going to deal with it. So maybe you could just touch on that, Alison.
Yep. So we as a team sort of made up archetypes because we found they were quite a useful way to help people segregate what types of businesses you are. So you start at, you're producing something, think farmers, they're growing something off the land, and therefore often the machinery they use is quite a high proportion of what they're doing. Same as if you're processing. So if you're making apples, or you're churning apples from apples into apple pies, our favorite example, then machinery and electricity generation is likely to be where you've got a lot. Depending on what you make, it might also be water, because again, there is a carbon footprint attached to it. As we travel up the line, then we often have your distribution companies, and that might be something that you outsource, or it might be something that you as a business have 50 cars that drive about. Then become, what is your fuel consumption? How efficiently do you drive? What vehicles are you using? And that transportation also fits for those that we've called a traveling service or traveling business, which is when you're going to your customer rather than they're coming to you. Because again, then you have a lot of people on the road driving to lots of locations. So your office might be quite small, but you've got 30 vehicles going up and down the country. So petrol is what we're going to be asking you about. The almost reverse of that is we've got customers coming to you. So you have a traveling customer, think any form of shop generally. And that is when we start to worry about heat in buildings, because you've probably got a bigger premises that people are going to come to, that you're going to want at a nice temperature. So there, your heat, what you use to generate your heat and your electricity. And your final one is your service, which in fairness is what you guys are. As you own the property, you don't really have a physical product that you're selling. You're selling your knowledge, you're selling something else, and people are coming there. And again, that's office space, so it's heat and electricity that are generally your bigger consumers. Across the board, there are five major things that you are in charge of that you can reduce your own footprint with. So you have your gas, your electricity, your heat instead of your gas, because you might use something else. Yes. You normally use gas. Electricity, waste, water, and transport or diesel/petrol. A lot of people, water is normally a small proportion unless you're doing something that generates a lot of water, but tend to ignore waste and water. Waste is often where you can have a really big impact quite quickly. If you realize that everyone is terrible at recycling and you can get that rate up, you can normally save quite a lot of money just by nagging people to put their tin cans in their recycling. So there's a little bit on all of them, but generally, yeah.
Yeah, so if you are developing buildings or repairing buildings and doing major work to them, so there's capital expenditure there, which probably does classify slightly differently, but nevertheless, take an example of concrete. We all know concrete is a massive, it has a massive impact on carbon. So where does that fit? Because our business, we had the discussion about this. So our business is involved in both development, redevelopment, but also then the ongoing service element, as you say. Yeah. So where does the first part sit?
You're within manufacturing generally. Yeah. So while I said making apple pies, pouring concrete would be the same. And often then you're even thinking equipment, or there might be a couple of things you're using a lot of. So concrete is one example. It becomes is there a way that you could use a lower carbon concrete? There is new shiny stuff coming onto market that's able to capture carbon rather than emit it. Can you use that? Or what's your raw material usage like? Do you know that the people installing, we have someone who's installing bits of electronic kit and he had no idea how many he bought. And I was like, how do you not know? Go work out first how many electronic bits of kit you've bought this year. And then how many of you installed? And he was like, surely that number's the same. I'm like, you tell me. And he came back and he was like, no, we're losing quite a lot of kit because it turns out they keep getting broken when they're installed. And so the guys are binning them, but we're not seeing that number. What? That number is waste to us, but that number is cost to you guys. If you can find a way to stop them breaking a bit of kit or to stop them buying 4 meters of cable rather than the two they needed and binning the other two, you can start to save bits of cash and resources there. So some of it will be in what you're using and some of it will be in the equipment.
Okay, so let's jump on to the certification. So you mentioned about NHS asking for certain criteria, but actually how is that measured? And we briefly touched about scope as well. So maybe we should bring that into the conversation now as well, because the more that the customers are demanding, the more sophisticated the measuring, right? So for most property owners, an EPC certificate is, right, okay, I understand that. I may not agree entirely with the way it's calculated yet. And it may not be fit for purpose, but nevertheless, we know that we have to have one of those. But what are the more sophisticated ways people are looking at providing some kind of accreditation, really?
So carbon footprinting is the one I'm very familiar with, which is potentially not what the one that you're thinking of.
No, I'm just thinking, I'm asking you the question, Alison, really, just if you were NHS or KPMG,
so if you're NHS,
and you're asking for some kind of certification, what are they going to be asking for? I mean, are we talking about BREEAM? Is there other things here? What are they going to be looking for? What's recognised these days?
Sorry, I shouldn't pull that face, but honestly, if they could all have one, that would make
that would be lovely, wouldn't it?
A lot easier. And I think that's the, how do I nicely phrase that? the bit that often scares me is that every supplier has their own idea of what they'd like, and they mm-hmm. all use nice words like a carbon reduction plan or a carbon footprint without saying this must cover X, Y, and Z. And so we did a painful amount of work trying to look at different suppliers and say, when you're asking businesses for their environmental emissions, what are you asking for? What number do you expect? How do you expect to calculate it? Perhaps there's not that much guidance out there, which is always cheerful to find. So for the most part, they're asking for some kind of number, some amount of your emissions, which is when I keep saying scopes, because the greenhouse gas protocol splits our what your emissions are into scopes. You have scope one, you have combusted it yourself. So you've lit a fire, you can light it if you bought it. And that is generally the heat in your building because you have a gas boiler, or it's the vehicle, the fuel in your vehicles. Scope two is pretty much electricity. Your purchase has meant that someone else has combusted it. And scope three is everything else. Yes. And so it's everything you've bought, whether that be the waste and water that you're using, or it might be all the purchased goods and services you have. It might be how much airfare you've spent sending your people to a conference in London, anything else your business does. All of your major suppliers are asking for a varying amount of those numbers. They might say, we just want your scope one and two. So our streamlined energy and carbon reporting, which is what everyone over 35 million it should be reporting, is just scope one and two. Some people are asking for more. Some people are just saying a number. So you would generally have to run that through a carbon footprinting tool. I actually do like the Royal Bank of Scotland's. I don't just say that. I think they've got the easiest to use one in terms of understanding what your footprint is, and then you'd be pasting that somewhere. You can then get that certified so that someone else makes sure you haven't done any fun accounting and somehow lost a vehicle in the process, or defined your boundaries nicely so that you can say, oh, well, actually, while we drive the vehicles, we're not going to include them because we're going to do something another to jiggery-pokery them out of it.
Yes.
And they can then you have a third party accredit that.
Okay.
But from a carbon point of view, that's basically where it is. From a building point of view, there is, well, I'm sure you've done lots of podcasts and all the different amounts of regulation that people are looking at and probably asking you for and around, is this building up to a passive house standard, or is it up to an efficiency standard, or is it just
that's right.
So
this is a bit that needs fixing, right?
Yeah, this is a bit where one would be very useful so that everyone actually knew what they were running towards.
But the principle really is find out where you are right now.
Yes.
So it's find out whatever carbon formula you're going to use, whether it's the greenhouse protocol or anything else, to work out where your carbon output is right now. So now you have a benchmark, at least in your own business, to then look at going forwards.
Yep.
So you can have a conversation with NHS or KPMG or whoever else is asking for it. Well, this is where we were. This is where we are now. Here's the things we're putting in place to make those changes as we go up. Because there is no well-defined, this is the sliding rule that you need to use.
No.
So you do that. And then, of course, the next part is, well, what differences are you going to make? And you mentioned about the scope. So scope one being things you directly control on your site, where you are, those costs. And most building owners are very much familiar with that. That's really where they go to. The second one is, well, where are you buying your energy from? And of course, they're producing emissions, potentially. They might not be if it's all wind or whatever, but basically, where are you buying your energy from? And then the third one is just everything else is like things you've bought, services you've bought. And of course, when you then sell out your service or product, what about distribution, processing, all those things, everything else, isn't it? Yeah. And that's the one that's far more complicated, but actually that's the one that's going to impact investors, because that's the one where NHS and KPMG are going to be starting to say, right, hold on a minute, we're buying this service from this company, whether it's office space, lease space, whatever it is, what's that effect on our carbon? And that's where I think a lot of private investors are going to start getting more of a pull rather than necessarily a stick from the government as to, actually, we need to make some changes here.
Yeah.
To try and get ahead of this.
That's when they're starting to say, they're looking at their own emissions and they're going, oh, our scope three is massive. It's our purchased goods and services we're really worried about. They're turning around to their suppliers, which are you guys, and saying, well, what are your one, two, and three? And where can you make cuts? Because the lower you go, the lower they go. And I think it's quite interesting how little information most people have on this, because we had a conversation with one of the councils around what did they expect when they asked for a tender and said, what's your environmental impact? What did they want? And for a lot of them, actually just what you said. This was our number last year. This is our number this year. This is what we've done to reduce it. This is what we are doing forward. Like, that's far more than what most people can do. They give us three paragraphs about how much they love the environment, but we still don't know if they've made any changes. Whereas if you can at least say, last year we used this much electricity, this year we've cut that by swapping out LED lights, please people, and other things, they know that you're trying to make those changes too.
Very difficult not to talk about energy, but let's just quickly touch on another area, because most of our listeners will be thinking about energy, but there's other factors including waste, construction, transport, we were just talking about. I think for people who are looking at those causes of carbon, you know, what are some of the questions they should be asking themselves about how they can deal with that? What are some of the simple things to make changes and impact on those things?
So everyone hates this one, but tough. Measure it. Mm-hmm. Your first line needs to be, how much did you use, whether that was electricity or how many skips did you lift last year, so that you know whether or not you're making changes. And then find your biggest ones. Nice and easy way to do it. Pull up your accounting software, say, how much should we spend on different goods and services? What are my top five? And then say, right, I'm going to measure my top five. How much should we actually buy on each one of these things? What was the unit? And then, is there a better alternative? And just research it. Like, if you're in Scotland, you're like the Scottish Enterprise or Zero Waste Scotland, if you're in construction, a great organization. There are English alternatives, to go and say to them, we're building, what would you recommend? Or we're looking at a lot of concrete, is there a better one? Can you, if you're contracting out, ask the supplier, is there a swap we can make? So either swap it for something easier or better, or start using less of it. Is it a problem that a lot of that gets put in the bin? If so, why? Or is it a way that you can manufacture that would use less of that resource? You could swap it and sort of tag team it, which is not the easiest response to you, but I would choose your biggest ones and just focus there rather than doing all of them and trying to do them all at once.
So it's picking those out and really saying, can we do this differently?
Yeah.
And can we do it by using less?
Can we use, and for a lot of people, you can use less. Often it just involves getting different people in the room. It involves going to the construction site and watching people work and saying to them, is there a reason you did it that way? Or do you think you could use less resources? Or, I mean, the one that makes you laugh.
You might have to speak a slightly different language.
Yeah, exactly. And have a cup of tea and a pack of biscuits, and you'll probably get a very different response. We used to have one in work that was a sign that was like, it was a very long and tedious process that we had to do. And there was literally a sign that said, if you can do this faster, we will give you 10% of the savings it makes. And, oh, you should have heard the things we could think of. And one, it like got us creative and less moaning, but it did also mean people can often see it. But unless you're asking that person, Jerry in the building site is never going to come find you and say, I don't know how to do this, or you seem to be chucking bits of kit away. So get creative.
Yeah. So that's people, right? It's not having one person in charge of this. It's having everybody involved. But of course, like any initiatives, it takes work. It's not just a new form or paperwork that goes into the business and then everything changes. No, it's the whole culture, isn't it?
I think that's where, in some ways, energy is often an easier way to start, because your gas and electricity, not only you as a business are stressing about it, your employees are stressing about it at home. And so if you can start to explain to them, right, we're doing this because of that. We've measured our gas consumption. It seems really high overnight. Way too many businesses have this. It shouldn't be high at night because no one is in the office. So we're turning the heating off. We're installing some timers. We're monitoring what areas are warm. And then say to them, this is how you do it at home. You've probably all got this boiler. This is what it looks like. People are bought in, because then they want to know what their numbers are, because they instantly see the saving at home. And being able to bring people as part of the journey, I'm not telling you to do this. I'm asking you to join us, whether it's climate or because we need to save costs. Encouraging everybody to take a little bit of ownership. And it's amazing how quickly people can get behind the gas consumption yesterday was X and we're trying to get it down to Y. We all love a game. bringing people with that.
Okay. There's three things that kind of bug me a little bit about this stuff, right?
So we spoke
about one, which is the fact that actually it's not all down to the individual companies. There are bigger things that need to be done, like the grid, right? But another one for me is the government bias sometimes. So we mentioned earlier on, we need to get off gas. And of course, there are sometimes they try and pick a horse, right? And the current horse seems to be, at least in my eyes, is air heat source pumps.
Yep.
And this in our industry is full of people with very polarized views on heat pumps. And often it's worrying to me the amount of people that have a polarized view, a negative view, and they've actually installed them. Not that they haven't and they think it's bad, but actually they have and they think it's bad. So like, right, okay. So, and I don't want to debate about heat pumps, right? But just basically, do you think there's a trend within government sometimes to have a bias towards a specific, this is the solution. So for instance, gas boilers, the solution is we're not going to have any. But actually, is that solution or is that a bias? Because maybe the gas boilers could be used, or because gas boilers effectively have wet systems. So the building has a wet system in it. And actually, the form of heating the wet system right now is natural gas, right? But maybe there's another gas can be put down the line. Maybe there's a different way that we could use the same wet system and pipes and everything else we have. But are we sometimes closing that off as an option? What's your thoughts on that?
You're making me laugh. So I'm like, have you watched the Climate Change Commission's review of the Scottish Government's?
No, tell me more.
You've got to go and watch it. Because Chris Stark, who heads up the commission, kind of makes a very similar point, a lot more bluntly, where he sort of says the government have got a knack of seeing something shiny and going for it. And often the shiny things are things we don't necessarily need. Right now, we need people to use less gas.
Yeah.
So insulation is a whole lot less cute and fun, but more powerful. And what we should probably be doing is focusing on getting bloody single glazed windows out, like no tomorrow, because we know that works. It doesn't matter what heat source you have. You should be swapping out of single glaze. But we get stuck because somebody sees something and goes, oh, we should do this. And it's like, no, we're not. Yeah. And so he kind of phrased it as he used to work in tax. And because that was boring and complicated, it never got meddled in by the politicians, whereas this is shiny and so it always does. Which I kind of loved in some ways we need to research lots of things. And there is lots of research behind the scenes saying, well, could we use hydrogen and what would it take? And how can we convert our gas grid to a hydrogen grid? Or is it a heat pump or is it something else? And we do just need to experiment. People don't like change. We never have. And so there's always going to be grumblings around what happened. But there is also, I think, a good bit of we get excited about different technologies without necessarily focusing on the groundwork. We need to focus on insulation. We know that yeah. is where we need to go. But that looks a lot less fun.
You're bringing me on to my next question, really, which is about practical steps people can take. But just before we nudge on to that, I think the thing about the government bias and as you say, the shiny penny or the silver bullet is that that policy may change again. So if you as an investor are looking at taking on some big investment for making changes, you've just got to be aware that government changes its mind. I mean, a few years ago, we installed quite a lot of biomass boilers across our estate, which at the time was lauded as a fantastic thing. And I still feel it is, as long as the energy source is correct. But it's gone out of favor. And now when you do an EPC, for instance, it doesn't really matter. Because an EPC is not about the green credentials of your building. It's about the energy use,
yeah.
right? So you're still going to use wood chip or whatever it is for energy use, but actually that doesn't really show up in your EPC because you're still using energy.
I think it is very much, which is the thing that no one wants to, or a very difficult thing, is what is actually best for your business and starting to think, can I look at some of the things that are being promoted as maybe this is a good technology I could use, but actually at the end of the day, like, do I want to install this because it's being pushed or because it will reduce our costs regardless.
100%.
So your biomass boilers, while it might not be helping the EPC, they're probably reducing what would have been a very large gas bill right now, or at least I think hope they are.
Sure. Yeah. Oil bill, gas bill. Yeah. But of course, you know, I don't know if you're aware, but all wood chip and pellets apparently come from Ukraine. So that's why they've all doubled in price.
Yeah, well, it depends. Or they come out of virgin forests, which is why biomass in the UK doesn't get a lot of love. So it is, yeah, it's really, it's hard to make those decisions. And as much as the government does wind me up at times, I can see why they are really trying to evaluate lots of different technologies. Sure. And it doesn't take much for someone to say something and it goes viral. But it does have to come down to
Right. It's your own decisions. And on the biomass stuff, I mean, I think is it Drax that's the biomass?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think they do about 4% of the UK energy comes from biomass. It's quite a substantial piece. But where that biomass comes from is another question, as you say. The only thing about biomass though is at the end of the day, as long as it's being replanted, it does actually regrow. But anyway, going on to the practical steps. So what can building owners, developers do right now? Some of the, you mentioned already about let's just get rid of single glazing, get double glazing in. What are the other easy wins, that low-hanging fruit to try and reduce carbon footprint?
Measure it. Go and work out what is your current consumption. What is your electricity? What is your gas? As small a unit as you can, preferably. Have you got a half-hourly meter read? Are you heating a building overnight? Are you heating it at weird times so it's actually too warm? Can you lop off the excess? Start with, because a surprising amount of people are. And then, do you understand your heating system? Do your tenants understand it? Do they know that how a radiator valve works or how a boiler works? And I know everyone makes laughs when I say this, and I'm like, I work in the Climate Change Institute. We have valves on the radiator. We have a TRV on a radiator. They all live at 4 because everyone thinks they're a power setting. They're not a power setting. They've never been a power setting. They're a temperature range. And so we don't understand the basics. So have you bled your radiators? Have you made sure that they're actually efficient? Have you closed off drafts? If you've got a cold room, shut that door. And so actually so much of it is still right early stages. And if you can just start to say that and to communicate that to tenants, A, you can save a lot of money and a lot of carbon quite quickly, but also they're going to start to understand what they're doing and what the knock-on has. And I think for a lot of tenants now, they want that data. We've heard quite a lot of the businesses who have, you know, who rent property, they have no idea what their meter readings are because they can't get it off their landlords. So right now, being able to say to someone, when you rent a property from us and you pay the bill, we can tell you what your electricity usage was, is massive. And so start there. And then once you've actually covered those bases, move into double glazing and has your roof got enough insulation. But at that point, A, there's a lot of really great support, especially if you're in Scotland. Business Energy Scotland can really help do some audits. But for most people, the little things of making sure that you've got draft excluders fitted and that you are turning things off will actually make a much bigger difference very quickly. So pretend it's your own home and walk around and see what you do.
I remember a stat on the course being mentioned was that up to 25% of heat is lost through drafts.
Yeah.
That's that. So you take your heating bill, knock 25% off of it. It's a big amount, right? And as you say, there's obviously insulation around that, and heating controls is a big one. Another one that we've been focusing in on across our buildings, just slowly as we go through each one, is putting in PIR sensors wherever we can.
Yeah.
Changing light bulbs, of course, and fittings. I remember another one was just, you know, some areas don't need to be as hot.
Yeah.
So toilets, corridors, maybe you can have them just slightly cooler.
Storage rooms or your meeting rooms that you only use an hour a day. Put the heating on when you walk in, turn it off when you walk out. I think so much of it is like put on your parent brain and walk around the building. Whenever I walk into a room, it's got all its lights on. Back of my head goes, it's like Blackpool Illuminations in here. That was my mum's sentence every time. And I'm like, we do it at home.
Some don't.
Everyone. Most people. How do you bring that in and make it okay to be that person that has gone around the office and turned all the lights off that don't need to be on? How do we say, oh, thank you for moving the box that's in front of the radiator because it doesn't need to be there? and encouraging that kind of change rather than being like, oh, someone's on a power kick.
That's interesting. I'm going to come back onto that. But just to finish off what other people can do. So we spoke about cool areas, PIR, heating sensors, etc. And then perhaps incentivizing staff and customers. Yeah. But the key thing, I think, is having a person or a team, but basically it needs to be someone's focus.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it just gets lost like all the other initiatives, right?
I think if you can, I was trying to calculate it for someone the other day, and I was like, I reckon if you just got your heating schedule right, you'd save about 15% of your energy bill because you're heating the building way too early in the morning. It's going off at like 6 o'clock and everyone's left already. So it could have probably gone off about 3 in the afternoon. And I was like, if someone had calculated that and said you had a £100,000 bill, so if you can knock off 15%, you've saved yourself 15 grand. Probably the most important task you could do this week then is understand what your boiler does. So if it becomes someone's role and it becomes a, my job could save this much cash, would that change our narrative towards how important that person's role is? Or if you said it every week, you know, if you've got a weekly meeting where you also say your sales figures, if you said what your gas usage was, would that help it become a, oh, they have really got a job that is part of their remit?
Yeah. Exactly. And that's a lot of that low-hanging fruit, but it needs somebody to champion it and get on with it.
Yeah.
Another thing I just want to touch on there, which you kind of just alluded to, is how do we, as humans, right, continue to live with all this shoulder weight on us about the use of carbon? Because, you know, I can imagine there's some people who just feel, well, you know, the way this is going and I'm being incentivized, I'm going to have to just close my business because there's just too much energy consumption and it's affecting the world. And I'm not going to get on a plane again. And I'm not going to go and do anything. I'm going to stay in my house with the heating off because that's the only way to save the planet. And how do you, because your role is all about carbon, right? So how do you deal with that?
It's really hard work. I hadn't really factored it in when I started this, and everyone talks about climate anxiety and that kind of fear of, is, are we as life we know it going to be okay? And what do we do about it? And now I've started to weigh up my choices a little bit more and try very hard to like nicely say things to people around me and not become that annoying human. And so how do you sort of balance that? Some of my things are, we don't need to change everything. I'm like, do I want to be quoted saying that? In terms of even if
just you me read, and you, Alison, just me. Yeah. And you.
If you read through the Climate Change Commission plan, they're sort of saying we need a 10% reduction in the amount of miles we drive. So that's not you have to stop driving tomorrow. That's you need to start thinking, how can you take 10% less? It's we need to eat 25% less meat and dairy. Again, I don't have to become a vegan. I can still have chocolate, but I should buy less, preferably nicer, and kind of use it that way. So some of it to me is starting to think, can I upgrade my choices? Or when I go on holiday, can I go for longer? Can I make sure that I'm not doing weekend breaks? So I am now like, I'm not going on a short haul flight for a weekend holiday. I can't do a weekend in Paris because that to me doesn't sit right. But I will travel further and go longer and then say, and I'm not traveling again for the next wee while. And so sort of setting that helps. But the other thing, to be honest, has been working with you lot, because it's also seeing the green shoots and being like, what can be, what are we trying to achieve? What are people doing? And I love the amount of excited emails I get from businesses being like, oh, we've just installed a solar panel and it's done this. Or like, look, we've just cut our like electricity costs.
You're building up loads of credits in your mind, Alison, because you're helping all these, right?
Well, it's more like going, so people are doing something. I think it's quite easy to get stuck into, oh my God, it's a massive challenge and we're never going to reach it. And it's like, actually, there is amazing technologies coming. There are immense amounts of individuals and businesses making changes. And any improvement is better than nothing. And so, yeah, you're not going to be carbon zero by next year, but you are doing something, and that's better than nothing. And as a business, you are also providing jobs, you're providing security to other people, you're closing it doesn't necessarily make it any better, because who's going to take over that role? And so, yeah, I don't have a perfect answer, because I juggle it every day when I go out with someone and sit in a restaurant and go, ooh, really want a chicken pie. I'm trying to cut my meat consumption. Which one wins today? But there is definitely hope.
Yeah, it's a transition, right? So I as much as some people, when they start listening to this and really focus in on the where we are, could just find it overwhelming. But you summed it up pretty well there. You know, there's some exciting technologies coming along. There are ways we're going to deal with this. And right now we have what we have. You don't have to stop living. But, you know, it's being conscious of it, working towards the best changes you can. And as a business owner, and especially if you're owning commercial properties, just thinking, well, you know, I have got an obligation here to make some differences. I don't have to stop doing it. People still need that space. But what can I do differently? What can I save and make differences that way?
Yeah. And then that you are ultimately providing a better space than someone else. So you're doing the job better, you're reducing the carbon more, and hopefully you're getting happy customers from it who are able to get information and support from you that they wouldn't get elsewhere.
Exactly. So basically, there's the two things we can do. One, how do we reduce our consumption right now? What are some of the basics we just spoke about, heating, insulation, all the different things that we know about? Yep. Some of the other maybe more quirky things like heating controls and stuff. And then the second element really is, well, how do we start generating our own? And that's another whole topic. But those, if thinking about those two different components, where are places people can go for help right now?
So if you're in Scotland, Business Energy Scotland, by far, if you're going, they have a little toolkit, training champions, something, some educational resource on their website, which is great for this, the simple steps. Anyone can access that, but you didn't hear me say that. So go and run through it and get the step-by-step, how do you make small changes? And then if you're making a big change, go to them and ask if they will do a building audit and how they can help. Business Gateway or whatever the English equivalents are, again, a great resources. If you're a member of your Chamber of Commerce, some of them have done some really incredible stuff. And so asking them, and they might also be able to signpost you on. But basically, if you Google like energy efficiency building company or something, I'm a company, go with what your government sponsored one is, because there is some free support available to get you started.
Yeah. And that's the key thing is, yeah, look for government support rather than necessarily what might look great, like great support, but actually it's a company trying to sell you a heat pump or whatever it is.
Yeah, exactly. If you can, at least at the start, and like if you're going to do a carbon footprint, I would use the Carbon Planner, the Royal Bank tool. If you are in Scotland and Royal Bank banked, talk to your relationship manager, write the program. Send me an email and I'll see what I can do. So there are some tools like that that are coming along, but there's so much free or local council provided support.
Yeah.
I'd start there before, I probably shouldn't say this, looking further.
Yeah. Okay. Brilliant. All right. Thank you so much, Alison. I think we need to draw a close there. There are so many different avenues we could go into, but I really appreciate you coming on the podcast just to give people a better idea of ESG and some of the things that we can do and some of the things that maybe are concerning people, that there are solutions out there. We're still all working on it as a race, right?
Yeah. We're running towards it.
But, you know, as long as we're all going in the right direction, that's what counts. Right, Alison, thank you so much for joining us. Look forward to speaking to you again very soon.
Hi there. I hope you're enjoying the content delivered on the CPI podcast. Even though it's free to listen to, it actually takes quite a bit of time and financial commitment to deliver each and every episode. Did you know that by leaving a positive written review, you, yes, you, will have a direct impact on the visibility of the podcast? And that's really important, because by reaching a wider audience, it helps our team to continually improve the overall content that we deliver to you week after week. For some of you, leaving a review will be second nature, but for others, it might be your first one. Open your podcast app, pick the CPI podcast and search for previous reviews. And on iTunes in particular, click to look at all of the reviews and then you'll see an option to leave a written review. Go on, it'll only take 2 minutes and it'll really make our day. And we genuinely read every single one of them.